F4, number 1B.
What is Isaiah's answer? And I think if the world of today only would read those few verses at the beginning of Isaiah in the first chapter, the world may be astounded, because he was saying to the people the following: the Lord has spoken. I have nourished and brought up children, and they have rebelled against me. Well, the whole world has rebelled against the one God and says God cannot be understood. Our God is matter, and therefore we have material theories, and with material theories we are going to have dominion over that world. You see, the mortal has dominion over the world. And then they say, well, the Bible already says that man has dominion over the world, not seeing that they are talking about two different types of men, that they are talking about the mortal man and the Bible is talking about the spiritual man. So he says to that situation, the ox knows his owner. The ox is very intelligent. He knows his owner. He knows his owner. And the ass, his master's crib, even the ass, what is the right, spelling, pronouncing, yes? He knows his master's crib. Huh? They know it. They know from where they are. They know to where they belong. But Israel does not know. My people does not consider. He says, from the sole of the foot even unto the head, there is no soundness in it. Can you see? He said, the whole world is not sound. It's rotten. Yes. So we can see that the solution that we have to propose is, first of all, to know what is God. And to know what is God, we need to know what is man. Not man that has a brain, that is not mortal, but man as God's consciousness of himself. Therefore, Paul was very explicit in this way. He said, for it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise. Let's tell that to the scientists in the world, to those millions of professors and scientists in the world. Let's tell them, for it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise, and will bring to nothing the understanding of the prudent. But has not God made foolish the wisdom of this world? See, it's all foolishness before God. For after that, in the wisdom of God, the world by wisdom knew not God. The world by wisdom. And they seem to be very wise. They seem to have all sorts of theories and know-hows. And the world by wisdom knew not God. They don't know the Creator. They don't know the ruling, governing principle of the world. Therefore, there is no hope that they will be able to solve the situation. For the wisdom of this world is foolishness with God. The wisdom of this world is foolishness before God. These are terrific statements. If we apply them to the present age, we know where the solution is. That the solution is there, where we really begin to see that we have to know God. But we can't know God with the mortal mind, with the human mind. We can only know God with that mind which is God, which God himself is. Therefore, as Paul says, we must have that mind of Christ, the same mind as the Christ has. So we see now something that is coming to the front, namely that really the biggest question that we will have to consider is that we have to go out from God and not so much up to God, because God is the Creator. Therefore, any logical, divine reasoning must be always from God. And St. John will tell us that about 1,000 times this week, that you have to go out from God, from the Father, and that you have to have the mind of Christ to interpret that Father, or else you use the human mind to interpret the Father. So these two big terms come up, namely God as the divine principle and mind as that which interprets the divine principle. This is the great point that we will find this week, that we have to go out from these fundamental elements or factors in being. It's also interesting to see something else in the world, that these thinkers, when they are speaking out and are philosophizing about the whole world, about the way we approach the world, or the way we should approach the world, how to find the solution, they more and more ask a very unorthodox question, which we were not allowed to ask in the old science, in the classical science, namely, what is the meaning of this whole world? The orthodox science has in its definition no meaning. It's meaningless. It has no aim. Whereas now they begin to say, well, with our science we have brought the world to an abyss, and we don't know what's happened next moment, if it's going to destroy itself or not. Therefore, this science should have a meaning, a purpose, an aim. And more we can see in various fields of the sciences that they bring up that the aim of everything is love. Quite astonishing, is love. Just think of Teilhard de Chardin. He was perhaps one of the first one that brought up that that point omega. He said the whole evolution of the world is driving towards the point omega. The point omega for him was fulfillment, perfection, completion, which we would call love. Or you take a psychologist like Fromm. He has the whole meaning of love as the basis for the human action. Or we can take the natural scientists that find out, especially also the cyberneticians, that find out that really behind the evolution is a factor called love. It's quite astonishing what is coming out. So in a way we can see that the evolution in the world is keeping in line with what we call Christian science. Okay, now this is just a short introduction into what we have been thinking 3 years ago about the subject. And so I want to start out with the epitomes that you have on page 3, I think it is, where, on page 3, where we have first a big layout of our fundamentals on which we base our teaching. The very first point from which we are going out is really that there is only one being, that that one being is an infinite being. That's our starting point. We are not starting out from anything else. We are not starting out from the human mind, as the whole world does. The whole world has as a starting point the human mind, whereas we go out from the one being, which is the divine mind. This is the first great rule for ourselves, a very simple rule, which is very difficult really to adhere to it. You can watch your own thoughts and you will find out very soon that it is a hell of a job. Sorry, we don't say that in English. To start out from the divine mind and never from the human mind. To start out from the one being and not from the phenomena. Usually we go out from the phenomena. This happened, that happened, this happened, that happened. And then we say, what shall we do with it? That's going out from phenomena, not from the infinite one. So the rule is very simple, but very, it needs a great discipline to stick to that rule. That's the great point. So going out really from God, from the one being, today would mean to go out from the one divine principle, or from the one infinite principle. We don't like to call God anymore God, because it has some kind of a undefined religious connotation. In a scientific age, we rather like to see that the whole universe is governed by a principle, by a infinite principle. So Mrs. Eddy gave to God the new name principle, and was showing that this principle is only known through the mind of that principle, through the divine mind. This infinite principle, or God, you can call, Mrs. Eddy defines in and says, it is as a whole, it is the all, capital A, the all, the one, the only. So these are the great pillars, so to say, of her teaching, that the one God is all, there is nothing beside it, that it is the only, there is nothing beside it, that it is the one, that is nothing besides it, no duality behind it. Therefore, she asks us to go out from that standpoint and now to reason from that standpoint in a deductive way. Just to keep to that standpoint of the infinite principle and say that that principle always interprets itself as principle and principle's idea. Therefore, now try to follow me at this point. If principle interprets itself as the infinite idea, the human mind makes at once a mistake and at once has two things, a divine principle and infinite ideas. As if they were two realities, the reality of the one principle and a divine reality of divine ideas. And we see them, so to say, next to each other, besides each other. See, that's the very first mistake we make, the greatest mistake we make, because if we make that mistake, we slip into duality at once. So we are asked to take the standpoint of the divine principle and see that the divine principle is conscious of itself, reflects on itself, and therefore we call that which principle reflects on itself, we sometimes call creation. That principle creates itself or manifests itself, we call it sometimes manifestation, manifests itself as idea, but again, not outside of that principle. That's the most difficult thing really to word, to put into words. That's why the highest spiritual teaching is always very simple, but very difficult to put into words, because words are limited, and the divine infinite is unlimited. Let's just point it out in various ways. Let's just see, for instance, that Mrs. Eddy's teaching says that the creator and creation is one. They are not two. They are not two realities. It's one. Principle and idea are not one, is one. They are not two. It's not the principle and idea and they are one. No, is one. She has to break, so to say, English grammar in order to bring out that principle and idea is not like a principle, a center, and then all the infinite ideas, a universe of ideas outside of that principle. Therefore, she says, principle is center and circumference of its own being. That's the point we have to see here through the whole week. Or she would say, there is not cause plus effect, cause leading to effect. She says very clearly that mind is its own cause and effect. Mind is cause, mind is effect, they are not two. If mind would be just cause, which has somewhere an effect, and there would be something outside. There is no outside. And there is where we make the biggest mistake in our consciousness. Because we, over thousands and thousands of years, we were trained that way. That's quite natural. It's not easy to get out of a heretical belief that is millions or thousands of years old. But once the point comes, and it's come this week, that we have to make it very clear to ourselves that there is nothing outside the divine principle. No matter how the divine principle expresses itself, manifests itself, interprets itself, and how that is manifested, no matter how, it's never outside. It's always center and circumference. That gives us a completely different worldview. Then we don't have a world outside if we start out from principle. Or she says, mind is one, namely noumenon and phenomena. So there is not a noumenon plus phenomena. there would be two realities. It's one, she says, it's mind is one. One is one, one is not two. One is one reality, and that includes noumenon and phenomena. And we will see, if we only slightly begin to touch this week, this wonderful aspect, that we feel a completely new era is opening up for us. Completely new. A completely new consciousness is opening up for us. That's why Mrs. Eddy says this interesting wording, mind is all, the capital A, hyphen, in, hyphen, all, lowercase. So we have the all in capital A, and we have the all in smaller case. But the all, the great all, is in all small. Again, saying the principle is not in the center alone, it's also in the circumference. There is no idea which is not the idea of principle. And therefore there is no idea which reflects not the whole of its principle. And this is that which we have to see over and over. You know, that answers really a statement. I don't know, I can't speak for you. I only can speak for myself as a student of the textbook. But I have studied those 7 days of creation, I don't know how many years. But I can remember right as a student, in the student age, that I read the end of the 6th day of creation. The 7th day is not the day of creation. At the 7th day, nothing has been created. But the end of the 6th day of creation, at the point of truth and love, Mrs. Eddy makes that statement, which seemed to me absolutely contradictory, which didn't make sense. Namely, where she talks about now this Genesis sense about the creation, and says, the spiritual creation was the outgrowth. Now, I must now talk about myself. So when I hear the term outgrowth, I have a sense that something is out of something else. It grows out, outside. Huh? It's the outgrowth. It is the emanation. And I hear the term emanation. I have a sense that something is emanating from somewhere to somewhere. Don't you feel that way also, like I felt? Huh? So she said, spiritual creation. I said, oh yes, that's wonderful, spiritual creation. We have a whole creation that comes from somewhere. It is the outgrowth of something. It is the emanation of something. And then when you go further, then it seems all wrong. Namely, of his infinite self-containment. Well, if there is an infinite self-containment, then you cannot have something outside. You cannot have an emanation outside of the infinite. There is no possibility for something outside of the infinite. Can you see? She's a terrific scientist. We only have not seen it yet, what the great scientist she was. She could see what we were seeing before, that we must culture a completely new consciousness that does not think in two realities, in the reality of a creator and in the reality of a creation, side by side. That doesn't exist. And it's absolutely horribly difficult to state that in terms, because our human mind is built differently than the divine mind. Our human mind can usually only think in duality, in comparing things. It can hardly think from the divine mind, which is one, and which knows no duality, not even dual things of reality, two realities, one reality principle, another reality, the infinite creation. Cannot think that way. Mind includes them. And so little by little, naturally, we come to the point that we have to culture ourselves into that consciousness, so that we don't have a sense that God is outside of ourselves also, because we are a creation outside of God. Then if we believe that, then we also believe we are outside and have somehow get into God, find our way into God, go back home to God. That's the difficulty. We have a wrongly construed human consciousness that does not coincide with the divine consciousness. Not at all. And so it needs a real culture of today if we want to help the world in any way. If we can't do it, this is as I said, if the Christian scientists are not able to do it within this century or the next century, there is no hope for the world. So we can see that we cannot just go on in our old concept, but must make a real paradigm shift in our consciousness. Now, we have just established one point, namely that there is the infinite one, center and circumference of its being. Well, naturally, the moment we say it is the one and the whole, and that we have to have a holistic sense of the world, we can ask ourselves now, what is that whole? Is that whole just an empty shell? Just a whole shell, nothing in it? Or what is that whole, if it's only one? But we also know it is an infinite one, which means that the content of it is infinite. That's naturally a very great philosophical question. How can the one be infinite? You have one, and yet you have the very opposite, the infinite. So those two terms somehow must atone with each other and see that we can have a one which is at the same time infinite. That one, Mrs. Eddy explains, yes, from the infinite one in Christian Science, she says, comes one principle. So she first puts the one of Christian Science, gives a new term and says it's a one principle, comes the one principle and its infinite idea. So the moment that one has can be seen as the whole, it shows that the content of the whole is infinite. Infinite in variety. Not infinite in space, not infinite in time, but infinite in the differentiation of that one. Infinite differentiation of that one. That's the content of it. And only as we begin to see that, we have any chance to understand the infinite as an infinite principle with infinite ideas. Because we know then exactly what has to happen in our consciousness, namely that infinite one interprets itself in infinite ideas. Okay, if she says that, we haven't gained very much. What can we do with infinite ideas? This is too big for us to conceive. Can we conceive of infinite ideas? We can't, you see. It does not translate itself to the human mind. We cannot grasp the whole as a whole. If we would try to grasp the infinite in its infinitude, we would have to be bigger than the infinite. That would be a contradiction again. So we know that this question can be solved in a wonderful way, namely through science, through the method of science. We know that science is that which can take the infinite, which we can't grasp as the infinite, and reduces it to simplicity, to a system. The moment it's reduced to a system, we can handle the infinite. We can comprehend the infinite. You take arithmetic. There are infinite possibilities of calculating with the 10 numbers and the 4 methods of calculating. With that little instruments of the 10 and the 4, you can calculate infinitely. And that is the meaning of science, we know. And that is what Mrs. Eddy saw. And therefore she could see the infinite ideas must be reduced to a system. And in order to reduce it to a system, we know very well, she had to reduce it to categories, to a few categories that can be understood, and by introducing, therefore, the categories of being, reducing the infinite to just 3 categories, with only 15 terms. This is simple. This is terribly simple. We can't figure something that is more simpler than that. And yet it's the infinite one. And with these few categories or three categories, with just a few terms, 15 terms, we can calculate the infinite. Amazing. Amazing what Mrs. Eddy has done. And actually the greatest thing she has done is that she could find those categories. The world since ever, the greatest thinkers, have always tried to find the ontological categories, the categories of being, and never found it. You can go through all the great philosophers from the ancient days up to today. They always tried to find, if they could not find, the ontological categories, just as chemistry has found the categories of chemistry with the periodical table and so on. So arithmetic has found it. Everybody has found it in their discipline. But being has never been found in its categories. Mrs. Eddy found it for the first time. If you ask me what is the great contribution of Mrs. Eddy, it's not that she said, she came along and said God is love and therefore not hate and doesn't send sickness and sin and death. This is just the fallout of it. The greatest thing she has been doing is to find the ontological categories of being and could see how it can be combined to a system, to the divine system of metaphysics. Then we have it. Then this includes everything. Then we can calculate infinitely. Yes. Do you give me 2 minutes? No. All right. Tomorrow.